Blog Talk Radio.
Double D, David Duenez. I am your co-host, Steve Canine Kim. Joined as always from the city of San Francisco, Golden Gate, Gabe Montoya. Good Monday to you, Gabriel.
Good Monday to you, sir. How are you doing down there?
I'm doing well. A nice, warm, sunny day out here in Southern California, but it'll basically be our last show, Gabe, for about a month where we could actually talk about boxing that takes place in the ring. Folks, if you want to tweet a question or a comment, you can do so at Steve Max Boxing or at Gabriel underscore Montoya or at Max Boxing Live. If you want to call in, we'll take your calls in about 15 to 20 minutes. The number, 347-215-7598. Once again, if you want to call in, talk to us, 347-215-7598. Let's begin round number one from the theater at Madison Square Garden. It was Boxing After Dark on HBO, a doubleheader. And for the WBO Junior Lightweight title, it was retained by Mikey Garcia, who moves to 34-0, the lopsided 12-round decision over contender J.C. Burgos, who drops to 32-2. Your score is 118-110 twice and 119-109. And the heavyweight co-feature, Bryant Jennings, says bye-bye to Arthur Spilska. In the 10th round, he remains undefeated. Gabe, Mikey Garcia, to me, he reminds me a lot of a younger version of Juan Manuel Marquez when he really had a speed and reflexes, in a sense that, Gabe, if a guy isn't willing to come down the pipe on him, pitch him fastballs, and initiate the action, these are the type of fights we're going to get. I mean, I've always said Mikey Garcia is a master craftsman, one of the best practitioners in the sport, but if a fight isn't brought to his doorstep, this is basically what we're going to get, what we saw on Saturday night.
I will accept that answer. You know, Marquez, I mean, I don't think he's a master yet. I think he's on his way to becoming a very, very good boxer. He doesn't have an inside game. He doesn't go to the body. He doesn't press the action. The power is starting to level out, although it's hard to say with Burgos because Burgos is a sturdy guy and a very good fighter and a guy with good skills who's durable. I don't believe that he did the silent agreement. I thought Burgos was trying to figure things out. He just didn't have many answers after a while, and he did taste the power, so he was wary of it, and so he didn't risk. But I don't think a Burgos is a risky guy. It's a guy that if he can, you know, overwhelm you and take charge, he will, and he met a guy that he couldn't take charge of. But I think everybody needs to slow their roll on Mikey. I don't find him very exciting. I don't find him particularly dangerous. There's nothing about his game that says, you know, someday this guy's going to beat Pacquiao. Maybe a very diminished Pacquiao that they need to build their name, his name off of. But at 130, his power doesn't look devastating to me. The speed is kind of there, but, I mean, it's functional, but it's not. And the way his body is changing, how he's getting more and more muscular, he's losing that kind of loose snap that he used to have. He used to be kind of a lanky guy, and I think because of that, he seems to be losing some of that power. I was very unimpressed with his performance. I was very bored. It was kind of Rigondeaux-esque, but without all the punches.
Gabe, when you look at Mikey Garcia and you put it in the context of 15 years down the line, when we look at Mikey Garcia, a victory over J.C. Burgos is a good, solid resume-building victory. It shows your class.
Yes.
That if you can completely dominate a guy like Burgos, who's had other good moments in his career, it shows you that you are at the upper echelon. However, we frame it within this context of, is this guy ready for Manny Pacquiao sooner rather than later? Well, he won on the scorecards, Gabe, but in terms of his campaign and what Top Rank would like to feed us in terms of marketing, I definitely think it may have not been a loss, but it certainly wasn't three steps forward. I would say they took a step backwards, and I think there has to be an absolute imperative if you're Top Rank, and specifically HBO, which has now given Mikey Garcia some layups here, okay, in the last year and a half. I think that you have to absolutely make a Yuri Gamboa fight. Do I think Gamboa is overhyped, maybe overrated, and a disappointment and an underachiever? Yeah, I wouldn't disagree with that, but Gabe, I do think Gamboa brings a little bit of spice, a little bit of life to the proceedings, and he does bring a major belt at 135. I think this is absolutely the fight everyone involved has to make.
I couldn't agree more. And I think the very first episode of the next round that I ever filmed, I said Gamboa is a knockout waiting to happen. And I think that if, you know, he's been down a few times, more than a few times, I think if Mikey's the real deal, and technically I think he is, I think he's very intelligent. He just doesn't really step on the gas as much as I would like him to, and I'm kind of wondering about his power above 126. But all that said, I would like to see Mikey be the guy, to show me that he can take out Gamboa, who I think is a quality opponent. I don't think he's every bit as good as everybody said he was. And certainly, with the biogenesis notebook hanging over him, there's even more questions than he ever had before. But I would like to see Mikey take him on. I think that's it's a natural fight. I think it really needs to – I say that ironically. I mean, natural in the sense that it was put together correctly. It's built towards it correctly. Let's see it. You know, I mean, who else would you rather see Mikey against at this point? It makes sense for TV. Let's do it.
If they want to move up Mikey Garcia, and last week I had a column that said Garcia's on the fast track, and that literally means not just on his way to Pacquiao, but he is going to elevate himself in weight. I mean, at this time last year, he beat Salido for the WBO 26. He's literally making a pit stop at 130. Gamboa has a 35-pound belt, and I believe the goal at the very least, Gabe, from everything that I've been told, is that by the end of the year, that they want him to have a legitimate fight at 140, and a name like Mike Alvarado has been brought up, because they feel as though that would legitimize and solidify his claim as a Pacquiao challenger. Now, Gamboa, we know how flawed he is, but Gabe, there is still a mystique about being the guy to disrupt someone's undefeated record and take that bagel away from them. And I think that's the thing. I think one thing Gamboa brings is an element of surprise. He does have good speed. Mm-hmm. And he has flashing power. And again, we're talking about marketing, right, Gabe? And we want to have him have a series of victories that are eye-opening against certain names, against certain profiles. Burgos, I think, is a solid fighter, but no one knew who he was. Gamboa, at least, has been on HBO way back in 2008, believe it or not. That's how slow his progress has been. But, Gabe, I agree with you. Mikey Garcia, on this night, he won, but he didn't necessarily come out as victorious as he needed to. Gabe, Brian Bye-Bye Jennings has returned back to the scene. Looking at him now, he's right around the age of 30, got a late start in boxing. What do you think his overall ceiling is as a fighter?
You know, it's hard to tell, and I really like the way he finished. And, you know, I was kind of watching the fight, and I was kind of watching on two levels. I was trying to listen to, because I have to watch the fight a little bit later than everybody else, and I see all the Twitter comments, and I was waiting to see what Andre Ward exactly did to drive everybody insane. Put that aside, I'm not sure where his ceiling is. I'm not going to measure him against Klitschko's, but I would like to see him against an Areola. I think he's certainly further along than a Deontay Wilder. He doesn't look wild. He looks very, very comfortable fighting. It's like he's a natural-born fighter. You can see that. He throws some nice shots. He obviously carries his power late. And with a guy like Spilka, who I think, you know, if you're dominating him the way he was, and somewhere along the line he started to take over that fight, even though Spilka had his moments even late, he put him down, and then he put him out and really hurt him and got him out of there. And he closed well. Which I liked. You know, he didn't just put the guy down and then not finish. He went after him, and he made sure that he didn't get back in the fight. And then he put a nice, you know, exclamation point on his HBO debut. I thought it was a very solid performance. It was a very nice performance, and it was entertaining. There were spots where it wasn't, but for heavyweights, this is pretty good stuff.
Gabe, I think what he showed, and this is where I go Larry Merchant here, he's good enough to beat Arthur Spilska. We're going to find out a little bit more down the line. But for a guy who hadn't fought in a while, I think Spilska is a pretty good victory, but I think Spilska has a very, very limited upside. I think he's basically a guy that makes fun fights on HBO. You could protect him in the Chicago market. He could beat the Mike Mallos of the world. But Arthur Spilska is never a guy that I said to myself one day might win a heavyweight belt. By today's contemporary standards in the heavyweight division, Gabe, I think Brian Jennings has the athleticism. He has a very strong work ethic. He's very well connected with James Prince. I think at the very least he can become a heavyweight contender. But I do have my doubts. At the highest reaches of the sport, below the Klitschko level, I do say to myself, could he really compete with guys like Bermaine Stiverne and Chris Areola? It'll be interesting, and I was discussing with someone that's at the higher-up level of the sport that has the power to make some of these matchups. Who would you like to see next for Brian Jennings? And the only name we really came up with, and it'd be at the same level, and they're each coming off HBO victories, Gabe, who would you favor in a fight between Bye-Bye Jennings and Mike Perez if they fought 3 months from now?
I would lean towards Jennings. He seems more fluid. He seems a little more willing. I want to see him take some real punches, a real hard puncher. Spilko can hit, he can whack a bit, but, we're starting to find out what he's like at the next level. And Brett Jennings is certainly no Mike Mallo. He's at a higher level. I would lean towards Jennings in that fight, but, I like Mike Perez. I think he's a very educated fighter. I did not like what I saw in his last fight. I would be interested to see Jennings versus Takam as well.
Moving on, round number two. There was other boxing this past Saturday night. It was Showtime from the Armory in Washington, D.C., and the IBF Junior Welterweight title, it was retained by Lamont Peterson with a 12-round decision over Thierry Jean. Your scores, 115-113, 118-111, and then 16-12. And then the Junior Middleweight Opener, Jermell Charlo remains undefeated with a step-up victory over veteran Gabe Rosado. Gabe, I know I'm in the minority. I know a lot of people have made Lamont Peterson into this pariah, and they want to blackball him. They want to treat him like some sort of leper. I've always enjoyed Lamont Peterson. I like him as a person. I know the mistakes that he's made. And I think on this night against a live, active, solid contender, I think he showed that it's going to take a pretty damn good junior welterweight to take his belt.
Absolutely. He's a solid fighter. And every time I see him fight, the Matisse fight kind of aside, he shows a little bit new dimension. And this is a very focused guy who wanted to stay on the outside, use that jab, use the straight right, like just kind of keep his punches straight, keep them long. And, Jean put up a very nice fight. It was the last fight that I watched today. And I thought it was a nice fight. It wasn't, a complete barn burner. It wasn't fight of the year. But Jean gave a lot of resistance. He came to win. He came with pride. And Peterson had to handle him. And it wasn't easy to do. I think you're absolutely right. But it's going to take a high-level guy to really get him out of there, or somebody that's going to surprise him with some crazy power the way that Matisse did. Other than that, I think Peterson is a top-level guy. The only thing I'll say, and I know everybody's kind of made him a pariah, this and that, is that don't go in the press and say you're going to do testing, and then we don't see you do the testing thing. I think that is something that, but I think that's something that the administrators in boxing need to look at. When a guy tests positive for something, maybe they should just, put a rule in, hey, you got to undergo a program, and that's just the way it is. But that's a separate issue. We're just talking the fight itself. I really liked the way Barry Hunter in this fight kept Peterson on game plan, going so far as to say, hey, what is the game plan? You say it to me so that you can remember and then get back to it. I thought he showed how good of a trainer he really is. He's very, very much underrated, Mr. Hunter is.
Yeah, absolutely agreed. Gabe, the thing that I've always enjoyed about Lamont Peterson is that he's got very good skills from the outside, good solid stick, good right hand that he loops a little bit. But on the inside, he does not get claustrophobic. He knows how to get to work, and that's what I like about him. He actually has what I would call, it's a basketball term, a mid-range game. He doesn't have to necessarily be all the way three blocks away from you, and he's not just comfortable on the inside. He actually has a certain range of skills that he can go chest-to-chest, bump and grind with you, or he could use his legs a little bit, although that's not what he really wants to do. And I've always said this about Lamont Peterson. You can't name me a lot of bad fights he's in. And the name that he called out that he wants next, I think is a fascinating fight, and I think it is a very competitive fight. And that's against Danny Garcia, who was announced last week, March 15th. He looks like he's going back to the island of Puerto Rico, even though he doesn't speak Spanish, against the contender Mauricio Herrera. I tell you what, Gabe, I think Peterson-Garcia, that is a fight fans fight. I would really look forward to that matchup.
I'd watch that fight. I think it's a heck of a fight. It's nice for Danny Garcia to get in with it, with an experienced guy. I think Lamont hit hard, He's definitely got some concussive shots, but he's not a guy you worry about that he's going to catch you with that one brutal shot that you don't see coming and knock you out of there. So it's a dangerous fight, and yet it's something of a safe fight because he's not going to be worrying about a puncher, and he's had to worry about punchers, Garcia. It's about time he not took a soft touch, but maybe got one that was a little more in his favor, I guess you could call it. I think it's a nice matchup, and it just really would make for all action. And to your point about the mid-range and the inside game of Peterson, that's what I want to see from Mikey Garcia, in that, if you don't comply with his long-range game, there's not a lot else going on there. I want to see him close the distance and say, all right, you don't want to fight, I'm going to pin you to the ropes, and I'm going to start busting your ribs out. That's what I want to see from him. And when we start to see that, I think a lot of things will open up for him.
Gabe, you talked about underrated trainer, and Barry Hunter is a man that I have an immense amount of respect for. But I think, again, the victory over Jermell Charlo against Gabe Rosado, I think Ronnie Shields is criminally overlooked as a world-class trainer. I'm trying to figure out why, because I remember Ronnie as a young assistant trainer to the likes of Lou Duva and George Benton on those great main event fighters during their heydays of the 80s. He'd always be in the corner alongside guys like Tommy Brooks. And you look at his current roster today, you got the Charlo brothers, you got a world-class guy in Arizlandi Lara, he's worked with the likes of Guillermo Rigondo. I think Charlo, again, is exhibit A, B, C, or D about the effectiveness of Ronnie Shields as a professional trainer.
You know, Ronnie is one of those guys, he's just a quiet master, you know. He doesn't really, you don't see him, people put him on their shows. I've done a lot of interviews with him, you interview him on a regular basis, But he's just kind of a quiet dude. He doesn't sit there and say, look at me. He doesn't wear shades and talk about, you know, philosophy with Radio Raheem. He just does good work. He builds really good fighters. I think, you know, watching Charlo, man, I was really, if I could look at the whole weekend as they did, you know, and say, like, what was the fight that stuck out to me? It was that fight. I mean,
really?
He really didn't get touched that much. I thought it was a very disciplined thing, and it was a fight where you went in going, is this too soon for this kid? What does he really have? And, you know, Rosado's not a world beater, but he can be a world tester, and he's been in there with world-class guys. And Charlo really stuck to his game plan. It wasn't the most exciting thing in the world, but it was very disciplined. And what he does, he's very, very good at. For guys that I haven't really, like, spent a lot of time being wowed by, I was impressed by what he did, and I think that's credit to Ronnie. He's really built himself some nice fighters there.
Gabe, I think what you call Rosado at this stage is a barometer boxer. He's a barometer of where you stand, and if you beat him, you go on to the next level. And in many respects, I thought he gave a more complete performance against him than even Peter Quillen, who holds a major middleweight title. Jay Leon Love struggled, and he's very lucky Mayweather Promotions was running that show, or he doesn't get that decision. And then obviously he fought Golovkin. Gabe Rosado is what you call now a gatekeeper, and he's a solid guy, but obviously there's some wear and tear, the skin's busting up over his eye. Jermaine Charlo, I thought in the first half, felt a little bit uncomfortable. You could see the experience of Gabe Rosado, like he had been there, but I thought from rounds 5, 6, 7, 8 on, I thought his class showed his athleticism, his speed and quickness, and I thought the confidence grew. I think Jermaine Charlo, if you pick the right spot, I don't think it's out of question that he wins a belt. And his brother, Jermaine Charlo, is more of an offensively inclined fighter with a very big right hand. He faces a very difficult Carlos Molina on March 8th on the Canelo undercard. All right, if you want to call in, we have open phone lines, 347-215-7598. And later on, we'll go over Gennady Golovkin's next fight in Monte Carlo that will not be televised in the U.S., and we have a bevy of news and notes. Gabe, let's get to the phone lines.
The return of the word bevy, ladies and
gentlemen. Bevy, yeah, that's my perception, by the way, yes.
In the 787, you are live on the next round.
Guys, I have been calling the new year. How are you doing?
Jose, our friend Javier, what's going on?
Yeah, first of all, Happy New Year. I haven't talked to you.
Same to you.
Happy New Year to you.
I just want a quick comment, and then I will ask two questions. The quick comment is, if Showtime is trying to get more viewers than HBO, how are they doing a pay-per-view on the free preview weekend? Does that make any sense to you guys? And the two questions I wanted to ask, what's going on with Cotto Martinez? They say one thing one day that they are close. They say the other thing that they are talking about different fight, but they don't seem to have a plan B. And who you like with Collazo and Ortiz when they fight on Thursday?
All right, Gabe, let me go first here. Gabe, here's my comment, and I've said this before, and I think we're repeating ourselves. I think Angulo Canelo is a fine fight. I think it's a lot of fun. It's one I want to see. However, I don't know if it's pay-per-view in a traditional sense. I think there's an economic kind of a petri dish they're doing here. They're trying to figure out the market value of Canelo Alvarez as an A-side. But, Gabe, we said this before. When you lower the bar of pay-per-view fights with Canelo and Angulo, you're really lowering the bar as a Showtime subscriber over what you get over your monthly bill.
Yeah, it doesn't make a lot of sense to me. It still feels like not real. Like they're going to back out at the last second and go a different way and say, oh, we're going to give it to you for free. And everybody's going to be like, oh, look how great they are. They gave us something that they should have given to us for free in the first place. I think it doesn't make any sense at all, Javier.
And Javier, regarding Cotto Martinez, you're right. Depending on what day and time you call certain people, that fight is either at the goal line ready to be punched in or they're still in field goal range at the 37 and it's third down and five. I don't know what read I'm getting. Gabe, here's my opinion as it relates to Cotto. Cotto wants to make a certain amount of money. He just turned down supposedly a $10 million offer to fight Canelo March 8th. To ostensibly say I'm going to plant my flag with HBO and Top Rank. So now I think Martinez is the fight that everybody wants, and I'm sure if you're HBO, you don't want to do a Delvin Rodriguez. As far as I'm concerned, it's Martinez or bust, isn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, it just doesn't – I was reading your piece today. I'm like, yeah, this fight doesn't make – I mean, there's really nothing else out there for him. You pass on Canelo with a $10 million, what else are you going to do? You know, it doesn't make any sense unless you think – you know, somewhere in there, there's a backdoor deal, and you're going to do the rematch with Floyd Mayweather, and we don't know about it. Other than that, I just don't see the options for a guy like Cotto, who's accustomed to making some serious coin. And for Martinez, it's the fight you've asked for years. Unless that knee is that bad, and you're kind of considering retirement, or you need that tune-up in order to see how your knee is doing, it makes no sense to pass. To me, I've always felt like this is going to be Martinez's last fight. Win or lose. I don't see him going past this. So if they pass on this, it doesn't make a lot of sense. And I'll jump right out with it. I'm going with the upset special. I'm taking Luis Collazo this weekend.
Yeah, so am I. I thought this was a very interesting decision by Golden Boy and the management of Ortiz. Luis Collazo, even though he might be 80% of what he was, that's still a very slick, sound boxer. And if Victor Ortiz does not land that big shot early, I think he's just going to get slowly ground down by the boxing and the movement of Collazo, who I think is going to be in great shape mentally and physically, given the fact it's on his home turf. I just think this Victor Ortiz fight, first of all, to choose a slick, world-class southpaw and then do it on his turf, that's just eyebrow-raising, and I can't wait to see it. I actually think it's a very good card with Daquan Arnett taking on Little Gomez, and I think that's going to be a good little fight. And, guys, going back to Cotto Martinez, I think if you're Sergio Martinez, you're right, Gabe, it's the biggest payday out there that's realistically available because Mayweather is not going up to 160. And if you're Miguel Cotto, now I've heard from a lot of the Puerto Rican partisans, they say that Miguel Cotto wants to make history by becoming, a four-time champion in terms of weight class. Guys, he's never going to fight Gennady Golovkin. I just can't see that happening. He's not going to travel to Germany to fight Felix Sturm. But he can fight the definitive defending middleweight champion, and he's never going to face one as vulnerable as the guy we saw last April against Martin Murray. I've heard a million different things about all these clauses and all these little things like catch weight, who gets their name on the banner, who gets introduced first, who walks into the ring second. You know what? All that is ancillary. As soon as you decide on the money and decide what this fight is worth, all those other dominoes fall. I really think both sides, they need to make this fight because the time and place is now, June 7th.
Yeah, bottom line.
One more thing before I go, guys. Do you think – I know that card is supposed to be on HBO pay-per-view, but do you see any way that if the Martina fight isn't made, Cotto say, okay, let's fight Peter Quilling?
You know, everyone keeps saying that Miguel Cotto is theoretically a free agent and he can go to both sides. I've also heard, again, that HBO has met with Golden Boy, and maybe Quillen is one of those guys alongside Bernard Hopkins that hops the Berlin Wall. You know, I will say this. If you want to do pay-per-view, the perfect B-side is Sergio Martinez. Peter Quillen is a nice fighter with the belt, but I don't think he resonates with the general public the way Matavia does.
He's also a wild fighter. He works with Eric Brown and, you know, kind of...
That's another issue, yes.
Yeah, so I'd be really curious to see if they would allow that to happen within their own stable. But I wouldn't go near Quillen if I'm Cotto. And I don't even think that... I call him Kid Carob, not even Kid Chocolate. But I still don't think it's a very good matchup for Cotto.
Javier, as always, thank you for the call.
No, thanks to you guys. I really appreciate talking to you.
All right, that opens up a phone line, 347-215-7598. Gabe, who's next on deck?
In the 707, you're live on the next round.
Hey, what's up? It's Carl.
Carl, how are you from Oaktown? How you doing?
Man, I'm good. I'm good, man. How you guys been?
We've been well.
Been great, man. Doing well.
Man, it's all good. Hey, man, what's this I hear about Bradley re-signing with Top Rank? Is that true?
Well, I think you've heard correctly. Basically, Bradley had a little over a year or less than a year left, and basically he decided to go for a rematch with Manny Pacquiao, a career high of $6 million guaranteed, with very high minimums moving forward, win, lose, or draw on April 12th. And I know some fans are very upset about that, but the reality is if Tim Bradley can make more money for facing HBO/top-ranked guys, he doesn't necessarily care if he's never going to face Marcos Maidana or the likes of Lucas Matisse in the future.
Yeah, I guess so. It just kind of had me thinking because, in the past he's talked a lot of shit about Bob Arum not supporting him and whatnot. You know, it just kind of puzzled me, you know what I mean?
Carl, let's lay out the facts here. He's not an A-side. He's not a ticket seller. But, Gabe, comment on this. For a guy that's none of those things that we talk about, in the 2 years that he's been with Top Rank, has he not faced Manny Pacquiao? Now it's going to be twice. Has he not faced Juan Manuel Marquez? Has he not made 1.4 for facing the ghost of Joel Casamayor, making another $1.5 million for facing Ruslan Provodnikov? I mean, I've been told he's made over $13 million in about 2 years or so with Bob Arum. I mean, tell me where Tim Bradley should be disgruntled with Top Rank.
Yeah, I don't really see it. I mean, I'm very curious to hear how the deal went down. You need to sign an extension in order to, get this fight. But that's, again, it's kind of like a whole other episode. We could talk about the Ali Act and the legality and all that. But you're correct. He's made a lot of money for a guy that doesn't sell any tickets. You got to remember, I mean, he's a true champion, no doubt. A true two-division champion, in my opinion. But at the same time, he was developed by Gary Shaw and developed in a way that he couldn't sell any tickets anywhere in his hometown. We went to a fight at the Agua Caliente of his, and there was empty seats, and that's not a big venue. So for him to have made the leap to Top Rank and made all this money at this point, yeah, maybe Bob's not selling him, but in a sense, him being honest about how disgruntled he is has gotten him press and gotten him probably more than if he just sat there quietly and thanked everybody for the wonderful job they're doing. It's negative press, but there's no such thing as bad press. At any time, the picture always changes. Manny's been iced at this point. He's vulnerable. Everybody wants to be that guy that finishes him off. And if you can put that, that notch on your belt, you become a bigger star. And I think Tim, I've always kind of looked at him as a mini Hagler. He's kind of building that kind of resume where he's just doing it the old-fashioned way. He's just having good wins. He keeps winning, keeps building it. And maybe one day he'll get that Hagler-Hearns fight where he becomes that big star and he gets his deodorant commercial.
You make an interesting point. Marvin Hagler, if you would have asked people back in 1981 or 82, will this guy ever be a transcendent star doing right guard commercial, they would have laughed you out of the building. I mean, honestly, pre-De La Hoya, Floyd Mayweather was a guy who was immensely gifted but was not a draw.
Right.
So things have a way of changing, and from Top Rank's perspective, are they overpaying for the futures of Tim Bradley, especially if he wins? I think they are. because the greatest fear that they had, from what I was told, is that let's say Pacquiao ends up fighting Bradley, who doesn't sign an extension, and then Tim Bradley this time legitimately beats Manny Pacquiao. Well, guess what? Top Rank spent a hell of a lot of money basically developing an opponent for Golden Boy for Floyd Mayweather. It's almost like they had to pay this price because Tim Bradley, say what you want about him, he's a very, very important chess piece on that board.
Yeah, you're right about that. Because he definitely would get that shot at Floyd, seeing Floyd didn't have any opponents.
Yeah, and by the way, guys, I'm sick of Floyd telling anyone, if you're with this promoter, you can't get the fight. Then you know what, Floyd? You're ducking. That is another way of ducking. And I spoke to some people with Bradley, and I spoke to his wife on Saturday. And the bottom line is very simple. It's not their job to figure out the politics of the business and to fix the Cold War. Their responsibility is to the Tim Bradley household, and they made a hell of a deal. And the fans can be disgruntled all they want, but they should really be disgruntled at the power brokers that have fostered this Cold War that creates this particular dynamic within the sport of boxing.
Yeah. Hey, didn't I heard that he didn't retain Cameron Duncan and his wife is handling his dealings now. Is that true?
From what I'm told, Cameron Duncan is no longer involved, and I believe it is Gabby Penagernico, who was actually the advisor of Miguel Cotto, who is now the point man for those negotiations. Yes.
Okay. Well, man, you guys take it easy, man. That's all I needed to know.
All right, Carl, thank you for the call. Gabe, one quick tweet here before we get onto the calls from Joshua, our old friend. What's the word on Ruslan Provodnikov and Lucas Matisse? Gabe, what I'm hearing about Provodnikov is that the one-fight option that Banner Promotions had to give to Top Rank for the Provodnikov-Alvarado fight, that thing goes by the wayside if they do not get a fight for him by April 19th. Now, here's the issue. Name me a fight right now, realistically, Top Rank can get Provodnikov, because I don't think they're going to make the Rios fight. And everyone else that Provodnikov wants, whether it's Marquez, Manny Pacquiao, Tim Bradley, they're either tied up or unwilling to fight. So I don't know what's going to go on with Provodnikov. I've heard the name Tomas Delorme. I'm not so sure if HBO even accepts that fight. And as it relates to Lucas Matisse, I've been told he may be making some changes behind the scenes, and he could be coming back in April or May. So that's the latest with Provodnikov and Matisse. And Gabe, let's go back to the Cold War. Wouldn't Provodnikov-Matisse be a fight that people would pay to see but simply cannot be made right now?
Yeah, absolutely. That would be – that's fight fan heaven right there. I'd like to see Provodnikov, you know, get a chance to unify against the other 140-pound belt holders. I mean, at some point, something's got to give. I know Golden Boy would just like to sign all the talent to themselves. And in a sense, I mean, I kind of wonder where all this is going. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong here, but it feels like Top Rank kind of screwed up and that they thought that the kid wouldn't grow up in Golden Boy. And at the same time, Golden Boy was aggressively signing everybody, A-sides, B-sides, C-sides, prospects, everybody they could. And Top Rank looked around and realized, hey, man, we ain't got anybody for Pacquiao. And our roster's kind of small. We're running out of those B-sides. It's like the game changed by Golden Boy spending so much money, and Top Rank refused to acknowledge that the game was going to change. They want it to be the old way, which I think is the right way, where you develop a guy and regionally, you develop him slowly with, you know, into a fighter and a draw. But the bottom line is the game has changed, and I don't think they changed with it.
Gabe, I don't think there's any doubt that about a year or 2 years ago that there was a point where Top Rank, they sat on their hands while Golden Boy spent a lot to procure a lot of talent and strategically say we're going to dominate this weight class, and create A, B, and C, and D options for certain marquee guys, or just create a whole marquee league of ourselves at 140 to 147. I don't think there's any doubt about that, Gabe, and I think Top Rank went through a bit of a vacuum where they are now catching up. If you want to call in, 347-215-7598. Gabe, who's next on the queue?
In the 347, you're live on the next round.
Hey, what's up, guys? This is Mike.
Mike, welcome
to the show.
How you doing,
Mike?
What's going on? I was just listening to your conversation. If, in your opinion, what would it take to end the Cold War? What would have to happen? Would Floyd have to lose? Would Pacquiao have to retire? Like, what would have to happen for Golden Boy and Top Rank to start working with each other again?
Let me start off on this, Gabe. I think it's very simple. I think both networks have to say, we're going to be agnostic. We're out of this. We're going to be Switzerland. We're getting out of being on a side. We're not going to support this. We're going to start making fights. If we like the fights, yes, but we're not going to do fights based solely on political and promotional affiliation. Gabe?
Well, in other words, Stephen Espinosa is going to have to step down from his position because, I mean, he used to work with Golden Boy, and whether he wants to say he's neutral, it's pretty clear that he isn't. I don't even really consider him running the thing. I think Al Heyman's pulling more of the strings at Showtime than he is. So I think a lot would have to change in order for the Cold War to go away. In my opinion, the plan is, as Oscar De La Hoya said in print, back in 2010, September, I believe, where they want to basically UFC the sport. They want it to all be under Golden Boy. We're going to run it. We're going to have all the talent. We want to put it all and then do even more pay-per-views. And as we're seeing this year, that plan is really coming to fruition. Really, we've seen the last few years. But now you've got Mayweather going to fight 2 times on pay-per-view, Canelo 3 times on pay-per-view. It seems like that's what they're doing. And so I don't really think that the Cold War is going to end. I think I don't even really consider it so much a Cold War as a hot war, where they're trying to strangle out the competition, which is Top Rank.
Mike, okay. Anything else?
Yeah, I just got a second question. When these smaller promoters like a Main Event and a Lou DiBella, do they even try calling Golden Boy anymore, do you think? Like, did you think Kathy Duva, since Curtis Stevens' win on Friday, think she's even bothered to try calling Golden Boy for that Quillen fight, or she just says, you know what, they're not going to work with me, so F it, I'll do something else?
Mike, it's interesting you say that because I've talked to Kathy and I've read some of her comments, and Kathy said, Steve, we'd love to do that fight right now. Book us for May, we'll show up. But she knows the lay of the land, and she's also said publicly that, hey, Golden Boy likes to go in-house. In fact, they like to go so in-house that most of your matchups aren't just Golden Boy against Golden Boy. It's actually Al Heyman versus Al Heyman. And several fighters have basically intimated on and off the record, if we want to fight those guys, we got to be with those guys. So they basically get both ends against the middle. So you're right. Listen, they would make the Peter Quillen-Stevens fight right now. But you're absolutely right. It may be all for not even discussing it.
So they don't even discuss it. Wow, that's just so bad because that's such a fight. I mean, I live in New York, so I do go to Barclays Center, so I definitely get kicks of that. But it's just like they don't even try making that fight. It just sucks, you know. And I just got a third question. I heard Timothy Bradley and Pacquiao, they're using Nevada drug testing. Why are they using Nevada testing for this fight, but Marquez didn't use Nevada testing for Timothy Bradley?
Gabe?
Oof,
I think that's an obvious question, isn't it? Come on, Mike. We know why.
And from what I've heard, his strength coach, and this is all BS, but his strength coach, Marquez's, Memo Angel Heredia Hernandez, whatever he's calling himself this week, he tended to think that Vada was slanted towards Victor Conte, and there was some sort of bias going on. And I'll just be clear, I've said this many times, I've written this many times, Victor does not work for Vada. He doesn't own Vada. He's put more fighters than anybody else out there into Vada and had his fighters tested. In fact, two of the guys he's worked with have gone, year-round testing. But from what I understand, he had that issue. I mean, this was in Bradley Provodnikov's final presser or the opening presser for it. And Bob Arum said, I'm going to get them all to do Vada testing. He believes in it. Trust the system. Trust Margaret Goodman, as many fight people do, because she used to, work in the industry and was a respected member of it. And then, and I said, even, Pacquiao, he said, Pacquiao, Marquez, all of them, they're going to do it. And then we got this snag, and it was the Marquez side. They didn't want to do the Vada testing. And so that's pretty much the answer. Now, we got two guys that do Vada testing, and they're going to start off the year setting it a great example for the rest of the sport. As Freddie Roach said in an interview we just did on Leave It in the Ring, he thinks it should be mandatory, and I tend to agree. It's certainly in title fights where you can afford it.
Mm-hmm. Listen, thanks for the call, okay?
All right, thanks, guys. You guys have a good one.
Here's a quick tweet from Mark Sokol and Nikki. Truth is, I fast-forwarded Mikey Garcia's fight after round 4. Good tactician, but no appealing personality. What do you think? Gabe, has he said anything you disagree with?
No, not really. sorry, I'm getting inundated with calls. We've got a lot of calls here. No, I don't think he said anything I would disagree with. I mean, I don't know. What do you think? Sorry, I just got hit with like text.
I've said this before. Mikey Garcia reminds me of a young Juan Manuel Marquez, and I remember when I first started cutting my teeth in this business when Marquez was coming up, and he was by far the third banana behind Morales and Barrera. The knock on him was he's a boring counterpuncher. He's the un-Mexican Mexican, and it wasn't until his reflexes slowed down and he started getting touched up a little bit. Now the perception of Marquez is completely different. So, again, things can change. Gabe, I understand we have calls. Let's get to them. Who's next on deck?
And in the – you've been on super long. 860, you're live on the next round.
Hey, what's up, guys? How you doing? This is CP.
CP, how you doing?
What's up, CP?
How you doing? I just want to comment about the Mikey Garcia and Gamboa situation.
Mm-hmm.
I think stylistically, I favor Garcia just because of the style matchup and the inactivity from Gamboa lately. But what I don't understand is why they're trying to match him up against Pacquiao when, you know, Pacquiao's got a pretty tough fight against Bradley. And I picked Bradley to beat Pacquiao in a rematch. Another thing, I would like to see Mikey Garcia fight another 135-pounder, and that's Terrence Crawford. I know they fought in amateurs, but I think stylistically, I think it'll be a tough fight for Garcia.
Here's what I think, guys. I like Terrence Crawford, but the fact that Terrence Crawford is not exactly what I would call an aggressive fighter, that would be a difficult fight for the audience to watch. I mean, you'd have one guy scampering away and another guy in Garcia that'd be waiting for him. The Gamboa fight presents difficulties, Gabe, in my opinion, because if Gamboa feels the early power, one thing about Gamboa, he's not afraid to get on those roller skates and go around that ring, is he? Gabe? But anyway, I think Crawford is a very, very talented fighter. But I think there's a reason why his next fight against Ricky Burns is not televised by HBO. He has to understand there is an element of showbiz, that there is a certain entertainment value. And then as Guillermo Rigondo, one of the finest stylists in the game, is finding out, you can be effective as you want. If you don't bring any excitement to the table, you can find yourself blackballed from the highest levels of the sport as it relates to television.
Well, in terms of the matchups available to you, I mean, you're right. I mean, that would be one guy doing little, the other guy doing less, Crawford versus Garcia. And again, I think Mikey's a very good tactician or technician. And I like Crawford as well. I'd like to see the inside game from Mikey. I want to see him risk a little bit. It's almost like he thinks too much in there. He's trying to mark things a little bit too much. I want to see him start to risk. When he starts to risk, I think offensively, he's got a beautiful game. He's got really nice combination, but he's not letting it go. And I also kind of wonder, is it because he's been dropped and buzzed in these last two fights? Is that making him tentative? Is he adding all that bulk and feeling kind of weak because he's making the weight? I'm very curious to see him at 135. Will he be energized a la Cotto after he moved from 140 to 147? That's going to be an interesting matchup. I don't think that Crawford and Garcia, unless something drastically changes in the style of either guy, is a fight that's going to happen, though.
And just remember, they are both represented by manager Cameron Duncan, so that also could be an issue. CP, anything else we can do for you?
Just one other question. How realistic is the proposed, Golovkin, and just past his opponent, is him fighting Kirkland?
I think it's very realistic. I was just told over the weekend that Danny Gill, for about the fifth time, found a way not to take that fight. So I didn't think Danny Gill is in the running for April 26th at the Garden, the theater in New York, on that date. So my sense is, although it's not signed, there's still a ways to go, that I do think that James Kirkland is certainly out in the pole position as it relates to getting that date against Golovkin.
Wow, what a fight.
For as long as it lasts. All right, thanks for the call. We appreciate it. Join us again, okay?
Thank you.
And, again, we'll take one more call, and we'll discuss Gennady Golovkin, the good boy, in Monte Carlo. If you want to call in, 347-215-7598. Gabe, who's next on deck?
In the 347, you're live on the next round.
What's going on, fellas? How's everything?
Who is this?
This is Richie from the Bronx.
Richie from the Bronx. Welcome to the next round.
Gabe, I tweeted with you earlier about the Vada issue. Wasn't at one point Aram talking about that it's some jurisdictional issue? Wasn't it some BS about that? With Bradley Marquez, that it's a jurisdiction thing, that that's why they're doing it in China, because VADA has the jurisdiction for that, where...
Gabe, wasn't that just an excuse and basically an alibi for Marquez? Let's just be honest about it.
Yeah, it was. I mean, there was, you know, VADA, there's two different, like, sample collection companies. Claridium handles domestic, you know, it handles in the U.S. IDTM handles worldwide. They're able to go to China. They're able to go to Mexico. They're able to go over to the Philippines, as they've done. It was just Marquez didn't want to use it because Memo didn't want to use it, and that's just what it came down to. And you know, to clear it up, I know some people were trying to champion the NSAC's testing, and I applaud NSAC if they had, you know, upgraded their testing permanently and actually reached the bar that VADA has set. But they didn't. They didn't do CIR on every test. They only, I think, did it for half of the tests. And that's really the big test that I certainly support, because I think synthetic testosterone, which CIR, carbon isotope ratio testing, detects, that's the number one drug. If we've learned anything from Biogenesis or Lance Armstrong or the last 20 years, that's the drug that everybody wants to use these days. And that's VADA's signature test. They do it for all those screening tests. So, yeah, I think it was a lot of smoke and mirrors. And I think now that, you know, in any fight not involving Marquez's camp, who doesn't want to use VADA, I think you're going to see VADA get used more and more this year. We've only got two fights. I'm hearing, you know, there's more fighters that want to sign up, and I think even some for the 365 program. It just makes sense. I mean, I think we should get past all the BS and all the rhetoric. Now that Keith Kaiser's gone, we don't have – somebody that's just constantly trying to undermine Margaret Goodman behind the scenes, as I've always heard. Let's just get to the point of, and I was told this by Greg Serb. I wrote this in my column about epinephrine last week, that his goal, he runs the Pennsylvania Commission, is just get everybody on the same page, all the commissions. What are we testing for? How are we going to do it? And at least raise the bar in title fights, which can afford it. The little guys, you know, Friday night fights, it's going to be harder for them. But, you know, let's just set the bar for the title fights, which are going to be on TV, and do that in 2014. So we can start having to hammer this over and over and over again. Even I get tired of it. I've been writing about it for 4 years. You know, let's move on to cleaning up other parts of the sport, like ratings, and do it.
And, guys, let me just say this. Until drug testing is really institutionalized, and what I mean by that is that the commissions are in charge of it, not individual fighters. And a commission, whether it's New York, California, Texas, enter your own punchline there, or anywhere else, New Jersey, they say, this is what we're doing. You don't get to negotiate it. You don't get to fudge it. You don't get to bring in your own testing. But they have real testing. Or they say, we're going to always use VADA. No ifs, ands, or buts. You're always going to get these situations because Marquez had the economic hammer where guys like Aram and Tim Bradley had to basically acquiesce to his demands.
Well, listen, lastly, on Showtime, I was listening to the Broner interview. I don't know why. I just don't think the Madonna rematch is going to happen. I just think that it may be taking away a future opponent for Floyd if Broner and Madonna go at it a second time.
You know what I found strange? When I was there in San Antonio December 14th after the fight, I asked Richard Schaefer, is there a rematch clause? And he kind of hesitated, and he said no. And I said, okay, I didn't think there was anything he'd want to lie about in that instance. Then you hear a month later that there is a rematch clause. I get the sense, and I agree with you, that they're still trying to figure out if there's a rematch clause. And Gabe, they're really trying to figure out, should we even enforce it?
That's really the thing. I mean, I don't get the sense that Adrian Broner is living in reality. I mean, on some level, he's a showman, and he kind of says things just to say things. But you know, for him to say, no, we're living in the present. I don't want to live in the past. I haven't looked at the tape. Dude, you should look at the tape because, you know, all of your mistakes are apparent. Either that or he just realizes, hey, man, I didn't really train that hard. I didn't take this guy seriously. I thought I could just blow past him, and I got a serious wake-up call. But, you know, to me, when a guy doesn't accept why he failed, he's not going to be successful the next time around. But I am glad that he finally voiced my feelings, because when he lost, you know, I did feel as if Floyd Mayweather had also lost.
All right, listen, thanks for the call, okay?
All right, thank you, guys. Keep up the good work.
Gabe, let's get to Monte Carlo in a fight that will be televised all across the world, except the United States, which is highly ironic and sad to me. Gennady Golovkin defends his WBA middleweight title against the tough and game Osamanu Adama. Gabe, here's my greatest fear, and I'm going to write on this tomorrow night. Is Gennady Golovkin's 2014 going to look a lot like his 2013? In other words, he's going to have a lot of fights. He's going to be out there. But unfortunately, there's not a lot of people rushing towards his front door to knock on and say, I want to fight you from all the big names. I mean, I thought last year what they did was great. But if you have a repeat of what happened this year, I think in a certain respect, I don't want to say it's going backwards, but it's certainly not moving forward, is it?
Yeah, it's just kind of moving laterally, I guess. It's, you know, I'm not going to, you know, say it's flatlining, but and the thing that bums me out is this is actually a good fight. I don't care what anybody says.
It is.
Osamanu Adama is a rough, tough dude. He's from Accra, Ghana. And every time you hear Accra,
they're tough,
Ghana,
Gabe. They're tough.
Dude, they're not going away. You know, it's going to be a long fight. And if he stops this guy, I know he's like, well, I've never heard of him or this, that, and the other thing. But this guy, he's got good tools. He's got a good beard. Yeah, I know he's lost three times, but those are decision losses. And he's got, you know, 12-round fight experience against good people. So I think that this is going to be an interesting fight for Golovkin. If he doesn't have a mental letdown because he doesn't have all the press and, you know, all the pomp and circumstance of HBO, you know, I don't think he's going to lose, but he could have a bad showing, which I think, you know, coupled with it not being on HBO, that could be a problem for him. I think everybody's looking for him to be, quote-unquote, exposed. And this is be an interesting fight, you know, for that. So
I saw Adama's fight against Daniel Gill, and let me tell you something. He did not embarrass himself in Australia. He actually had some moments. And I just think, as it relates to Gennady Golovkin in a situation like this, it is almost a no-win situation. If you win, you're expected to, and if you're less than dominant, then comes out the E-word, exposed, that you just brought up. And in talking to Tom Loeffler, if they're going to continue to do this fourth fight, where HBO is only going to be able to really do three of them, and they take their usual European fight, which they've said this is part of our business plan, which I don't disagree with. I think fighters should be willing to fight much more often and away from HBO or Showtime. Next time, they better have it in a venue bigger than your garage. I think it's really that simple. From what I was told by various people, HBO made every single concession to try to make this happen for their subscribers on HBO 2. Rodney Berman, I don't think, cooperated. I think it's really that simple, and at the end, Golovkin and the fans lose. Gabe, here's an interesting story that you know I had to talk about. Carl Froch says, hey, I might fight Groves, but the fight I really want is Julio Cesar Chavez Jr., what we're going to call the Larry Merchant Super Bowl, because he brought up this fight to us about, what, 6-7 months ago. I think, wait a minute, guys, that's the fight to make at 68. I think you can go either way. I think there's unfinished business with Groves. I think the Chavez Jr. fight is good business, and I think it's a heck of a fight. But I got to talk about my man, Andre Ward. Now, I'm not just saying this to raise traffic or to gain Twitter followers by talking about him. But, Gabe, have you heard the flip-flopping of the son of Shoe Palace? This is a guy just months ago was saying, Chavez, what a spectacular talent. By the way, he actually said that. What a tough fight. This is a fight the fans want. Oh, I think that's a fight that everyone deserves. Now that Froch might get him, he's a weak link and he's chickening out. It's not much of a fight. In the words of Aretha Franklin, Mr. Ward, who's zooming who?
It doesn't make a lot of sense. It goes back to me. To my issue with having active fighters be commentators on television, because they become kind of disingenuous.
Kind of.
He's
the worst.
Kind of.
Gabe, if you're going to be disingenuous and have an agenda, at least be smart enough to hide it and camouflage it. Andre Ward is not as smart as people think he is because he's quote unquote articulate. He's the well-spoken brother, but look what's actually coming out of his mouth. He just really is not smart enough. I mean, now here's another one. He's not going to go to the UK to take on Carl Froch. You know what? I'm going to take on George Groves, who was just stopped by Carl Froch in the UK. Tell me how in the world that dictates any type of sense, Gabe.
It doesn't make any sense, you know? And I remember that Chavez-Vera telecast, which the rest of the boxing world was going, this is ridiculous. How many times are they going to move the weight? Chavez didn't look good. And there was Ward kind of praising him throughout the fight and saying that he was looking good and trying to, like, talk him up. And the whole time I felt like, man, you're just trying to preserve the possibility that you can get this fight. And that's not – I mean, granted, you know, the guys ringside are not journalists. Now that Larry Merchant's gone, what you have is a fan in Max Kellerman who tends to agree with his idols sitting next to him or the guys he likes, Roy Jones or Andre Ward, and Jim Lampley, who's very, very good at his job. And I think his role is kind of almost to be the professional neophyte in that when the expert says something, he says, well, do you say that because of this? So that he clarifies for the viewer what the quote-unquote expert is saying and then can translate it. I think he's very good at his job. Sometimes, you know, he's prone to hyperbole, but he's a blow-by-blow guy. That's what they do. There is no more news voice sitting ringside for HBO, which they sorely miss. So I know people didn't like Larry Merchant, but he was honest. Call him a curmudgeon, say he doesn't like, you know, skilled black fighters or he only likes brawlers, this and that and the other thing. He was an honest-to-goodness newsman, and he gave you an honest opinion. HBO is sorely lacking that. And Andre Ward is kind of epitomizing that right now with these opinions. And then coming out in the press, he's just not very – you need to call his publicist. I know you haven't talked to her in about 3 or 4 years, but maybe, you know, give her some advice on how he should talk in the press because he's screwing himself up.
And, again, these aren't my words. I'm just merely repeating, and you could Google these things, what Andre Ward was saying about Chavez a couple of months ago to now. This guy flip-flops more than a politician as it relates to, like, the abortion issue. It's really sad and hypocritical, and whoever points it out is a bad guy, which I find to be very humorous. Gabe, before we get back to the calls, Bradley Pacquiao, we've discussed this at length, but I want to ask you this. Is this the proper fight, yay or nay, on this matchup on April 12th?
Oh, I like this fight a lot. A lot of people didn't like the first fight. It wasn't Hagler-Hearns, but it was a tough competitive fight, and it brought out dimensions in both guys that we didn't quite see. I mean, that hadn't seen before. They're kind of evenly matched in this sense. Bradley was able to take the power. He did suffer injuries to at least one of his ankles, or if not both, and he fought his way through the fight, and he's slowly kind of raising up. I find this fight interesting because I want to see what Tim Bradley does the second time around. I've seen Pacquiao in a lot of rematches. I would like to see what Tim Bradley's like. In this kind of situation, how is he going to adjust? What different part of his game are we going to see? Because he's kind of a Swiss Army fighter. He doesn't do one thing great. It's not like he's super fast or super hard hitting, but he's very intelligent and he's versatile. That's what he does well, is he adapts. So I'm curious to see, does he move off of the game plan that he had in the first fight, try to take the fight and be more aggressive with Pacquiao? I like the fight a lot, and you know, they're both kind of setting the bar with this VADA testing, but to me, Tim is becoming more and more of a champion with each fight, and we get to see more dimensions, and that I like. They're two classy guys, and, yeah, why wouldn't I want to see this fight?
Last 4 or 5 years, Tim Bradley's resume is as good as anyone in boxing. I mean, this guy has victories over Miguel Vasquez as a prospect and Louis Abreu when he wasn't even a real welterweight, and then everything else in between that he's done. And last year, I thought, was the best rehabilitation year I've ever seen from a fighter who was undefeated. Fight of the Year candidate and beating a Hall of Famer in Marquez. I thought he had a magnificent 2013. Looking ahead, we're going to talk about some of the heated action that we saw on Friday night, and we'll talk about some of the other news and notes. And this Thursday night from the Barclays Center, I think a very, very interesting card on Fox Sports 1. But, folks, if you want to tweet at us, at SteveMaxBoxing, at Gabriel_Montoya, or at Max Boxing Live. If you want to call in, 347-215-7598. We got another 30 minutes. Gabe, who's next on deck here?
In the 646, you're live on the next round. 646.
Yeah, hello, good evening. Yes,
who is this? How you doing?
Yeah, it's Amilcar. I'm doing pretty good.
Welcome to the next round.
Thank you. I was just on hold, but I wouldn't mind asking you about the Felix Verhaedo. I'm actually in Puerto Rico, funny enough, but I missed the fight on Saturday, and I just would like to know.
You missed the most exciting 20 seconds of the weekend. Literally. He basically corkscrewed a guy into the canvas with, I think it was like a left hook. Now, here's an interesting sidelight on Melgar and Gabe. March 15th, Danny Garcia, the Puerto Rican of all Puerto Ricans, of course, from Philadelphia, he's going to be taking on Herrera. The word is that they're going to take him to Puerto Rico, to the island. I was told by somebody at Top Rank that afternoon that if Verdejo won in a couple of hours, they're going to be doing an Unomas show, guess where? Puerto Rico. So it's going to be a very interesting dynamic because Danny Garcia is a very good fighter, one of the better ones in the world. He's a world champion. But Amilcar, I'm telling you right now, the more popular guy on the island to the Puerto Ricans is actually Felix Verdejo.
Yeah, I wouldn't disagree with you. I mean, the fight wasn't on TV at the restaurant that I went to go watch the boxing at, but everyone out there was really, really excited about the kid's future. And I saw him on the undercard to the Donaire-Rigondeaux fight in New York, and he was very impressive. So I'm really looking forward to seeing more things from him.
Gabe, I'll say this right now, and I know this is going to be a daunting statement that I'm going to make because I know how big of a fan you are, but just in terms of the charisma and the smile and the emotion he evokes, there's a guy that I'm reminded of. His name is Felix Tito Trinidad. Gabe, am I out of my mind?
No, I don't think so. And you know, I'm a pretty big Tito fan, and you look at it. Everybody was talking about Cotto kind of taking that on, and he was just too stoic. He did have a nice skill set, but Verdejo, he's got that explosive power, that bounce in his step. He's got the nice technique, but he's got that charisma. You can feel it. The fans love him, and he connects with the fans. He enjoys the cheers, and that's what Tito had. He doesn't have the fragility of Tito. We haven't seen him get knocked down by guys he shouldn't, but I think he's very early on in his career at this point. You know, he's at the 10-0 mark. Now we're going to start to see them kind of ratchet it up and take on guys that are a little more dangerous. And I think we'll start to find out if he's got the depth. You know, what else does he have? Because Tito had the warrior's heart. But I don't think you're too far off. I mean, this guy, he looks like the goods, man. He is not a diamond. This diamond is getting smoothed out. It's not so much in the rough anymore.
I think he's only 20 or 21. There's a lot 20. Of time left here. And you look at his body. Right now he's between 26 and 30. But I could see him growing into a solid lightweight, going up to 140, and eventually, when he's got his man muscles, being a good solid welterweight. I think if he was a stock, and I said this on Twitter on Saturday night, I would be buying him like Apple in 2001. I think the future is so bright for this guy.
Yeah, I agree.
Couldn't agree with you more.
Amilcar, anything else we can do for you?
Not really. You did write a very entertaining piece on the Vargas reality TV show, and he mentioned in it that he had thought about coming out of retirement before. I've said it before, I'm not at all interested in the Khan Mayweather fight. And I know this would never happen, but I'd actually pay money to see Vargas take on Mayweather more so than I would.
Right now, Mayweather. Really?
So I'll just leave it. I mean, I'm on a scale of 1 to 10. I've got zero interest in Con Mayweather. I don't even know why it's happening, to be honest with you. It's a lower fight for me than bringing a guy out of retirement like in an old boxing movie. To be honest with you.
Wow. Well, Amilcar, you have your chance to be heard as a consumer on the night of May 3rd. Amilcar, thanks for the call.
All right, thank you, guys. Take care.
All right, we got a lot of calls on the line. Gabe, who's next?
In the 951, you're live on the next round.
Peace, fellas.
Hello, welcome
Peace,
to the
man.
Show. Who is this?
This is Dave. Hey, I was wondering, what do y'all think the type of improvement that Gabe Rosado did? Because I kind of figured Charlo was going to do what he did, but what improvements did Rosado do for y'all?
I wouldn't say he made a lot of improvements. I mean, what Rosado is a steady, seasoned pro. He knows how to handle himself. Now, I said this before earlier in the show, and Gabe, I don't know if you agree with me. Gabe is a solid 10-round fighter. Is he necessarily a championship-level fighter? Probably not, but if you're a guy like Charlo, if you really are the goods, you have to be able to defeat a guy like Rosado down the line.
There's no question. I mean, he's not going to he's a guy that may not catch you with that one shot to the chin, but he might not might know how to go to the body and hurt you and get you into some trouble. He's got experience, and as you tire deep into the fight, he's a guy that's been there and may know how to take advantage. He's a stepping stone in a sense, and I don't mean to denigrate him in that sense, but guys, you build your record on guys that you're really supposed to get out of there, like you always say, Steve, you know, the guys that are like the Chris Rock guys. You know, you're doing what you're supposed to do. You're doing your job and knocking them out. That's where Verdejo is kind of graduating out of. But then there's the guys like Rosado, who, if you're not on your game, you don't take them seriously, they could upset you. And Charlo showed that he's a true professional. He's skilled, and he could fight in spots, not just box. But there were times where they had to exchange, and he had to fight his way out of the corner, and he would do so. He was not afraid to exchange. I think we got to see some dimensions out of Charlo because Gabe Rosado is so experienced and such a willing guy. It was a good performance. I didn't really see much new from Rosado, but I did see it was a solid performance from him that brought out the best in Jermell.
Basically, what I was getting at is, like, when you match in fights, if you study in tapes, and like what I notice nowadays with the fighters nowadays, they really don't change up. I mean, sometimes you got to adjust to the fights and who you fighting. And like with Gabe, I mean, you got to work the jab to get in with a boxer. I mean, a boxer, if you're a decent boxer nowadays that can work angles, you usually beat somebody like Gabe or you don't get knocked out in good shape. I mean, so you got to, you know, Gabe was supposed to jab to get in. But like I said, I've been watching Charlo's them out here in California since they've been fighting out here. So, you know, I kind of figured it was going to go like that. But that's all I have.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, listen, thanks for the call. Join us again, okay?
All right, peace.
And let's get to our next call. If you want to call in, 347-215-7598. Gabe, who's next?
I just kind of sunk in the Vargas Mayweather thing. That I kind of want to be smoking too.
I mean, 10 years ago, I would have loved to have seen that fight. 10 years ago.
Yeah, 10 years ago. But let me ask you this though: in looking at the press releases today, Mayorga Mayweather.
Listen, Gabe, don't give him any ideas. Please.
Let's go overseas. 011. You've been on for about 45 minutes. You're live on the next round.
Hello?
How you doing?
Yes.
Oh, hi. Henry from London.
Henry, how are you? What can we do for you?
Yeah, not too bad. Yeah, you brought up a couple of points I wanted to bring up, actually, about the Frotch Groves. Obviously, the IBF have ordered a rematch. So I was just wondering, actually, you know, do you guys think that Frotch will take that rematch or vacate? Do you think he should or go to Chavez?
Gabe, I'll take this first. I think it's very simple.
Yeah.
If the economic deal to face Chavez is so great, I think we have to remember here that Carl Froch has a version of the WBA belt, and we're also dealing with a fighter who's 36 years old and I think has slowed perceptibly. I think he's lost the foot off of his fastball. I think his reflexes are dulled. And if he can make more money facing Chavez, who's a slower, plodding fighter, as opposed to Groves, who's pretty athletic with a very good, quick jab. You know where I'm going with this. If you're Eddie Hearn and Carl Froch, you say, you know what, let's get our passport ready and let's go to Viva Las Vegas.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I mean,
he's at that point now.
I wouldn't begrudge him that. You know, I mean, Carl's got a nice resume. He's fought just about everybody. He lost to the best guy in the division, in Andre Ward. Why not make a little bit of money? And it's not exactly a gimme at this age. At age 36, he's starting to show some wear and tear. He got brutally knocked down and he was able to come back. But you know, Chavez Jr., I mean, the way he's growing, he's a future heavyweight at some point. So he's going to be dealing with a young, strong kid who's going to keep coming all night. I think that's a really action fight and a dangerous fight for him. In some senses, looking at the way he kind of took apart Groves towards the end of the fight, I almost wonder why he wouldn't want to go back to that and try to build on what he was able to do to Groves at the finish. But if I'm looking for the money, I go for Chavez, personally.
Yeah, I mean, I think in the UK we all think that Froch needs to rematch him, you know, to gain back some self-respect, really, because I think everyone's on Groves' side now.
Let me ask you this, though. And obviously, I'm assuming you're in Britain, and in interacting with some of the people on Twitter, there seems to be a perception that there's going to be huge backlash against Carl Froch that if he doesn't give Groves the immediate rematch, and then if the Chavez fight is made, they're not going to support him. They're not going to go to Las Vegas as they did for Ricky Hatton and maybe Joe Calzaghe. Is that true from your vantage point?
Yeah, possibly. I think mainly because, I mean, Froch Groves, it captured a lot of just casual sports fans in general. So when you've got, like, almost the whole nation viewing, and, you know, Groves is booed going in and cheered going out, and Froch said all those things at the end of the fight, and he didn't really, you know, represent himself well after the fight. I think not just, you know, the boxing fans here, but a lot of the sports public feel automatically that he should be rematching Groves. They don't really know Chavez, the casual fan I'm talking about. They don't really know Chavez as well as us boxing fans. So I think the general consensus is, yeah, you have to rematch Groves. We don't really care about sort of Chavez, you know, not me personally, because I think, you know, that would be a great fight in Vegas. I'd love to go and see that. But, yeah, the general consensus, Froch needs to sort of rematch Groves here in the UK.
Okay, well, listen, I appreciate the call. Listen, join us again, okay?
All right, cheers.
Dave, here's one thing that's missing, though. If you read the IBF letter, where it basically throws Howard Foster under the bus, I think Groves got a raw deal. However, we cannot forget about this. I thought Froch had turned the momentum of the fight, and when the fight was waved off, it was Froch coming on, and it was Groves that was badly buzzed.
Yeah, he was coming apart, you know, and as much as he was, I thought he had the fight in hand. I mean, I really wanted to see the fight come to his logical conclusion. I think that's what really upset people more than anything, is that it got cut off before it really got the chance to truly finish, you know, in a sense, like kind of like Melina Kirkland, in that you had one guy that was losing the fight but turning it around. He didn't get a chance to finish it off, and the other guy didn't get a chance to redeem himself from the knockdown and right the ship and finish with a glorious victory. We all got robbed, and that's why I really would like to see it again. But, yeah, if I'm Froch, I'm going, you know, I took him into deep waters. Maybe he's thinking, well, the kid's going to learn, he's going to grow, and he's going to be a little more reluctant and use that speed and the length and everything that he used to his advantage in the first half even more so. And, you know, it's kind of like, well, you kind of get away with one, and now let's go make some money. It's a tough situation.
Mm-hmm. That's just Dave, who's next on the queue here?
I mean, look, in the – you've been on for about 40 minutes. It's a 111 number. I think you're probably like a Skype number or something. You're live on the next round.
Hello.
Hello.
And that's our first knockdown of the night. Who's after that, Gabe?
In the 707, you're live on the next round. 707? Oh, you know what? Can you back up again? Sorry about that. In the 714. You've not been called yet. 714, you're live on the next round. That's two knockdowns in a row.
Hmm.
And going through the list, and 951, but a different 951, you're live on the next round. Nope.
No, peace
out. Oh.
I heard somebody, Gabe. You gave him a quick count. You did the Howard Foster, Gabe. Boy, that's ironic.
I did the You're live on the next round, 951. Are you there?
No, y'all already talked to me, man. Only thing I can say is I like Showtime Extreme, too, man. I love watching up-and-coming fighters, too.
Well, I'll pass that on to Stephen Espinoza. We're going to probably talk later. Thank you. The list is getting longer and longer. I know we haven't talked to this one. Actually, they dropped off. Sorry, Steve, it's a long list, since I'm just kind of going through it. Actually, the last guy on hold just hung up out of Palm Desert. So it's back to just you and I at the moment.
Gabe, what a eventful Friday night on ESPN2, NBC Sports, and Fox Sports 1. And this, I said this on Friday. None of these main events, you add them up together, and I think they went about 6 minutes worth of action. But what a memorable night. Chris Stevens just blows out Patrick Majewski in like 40 seconds. Antonio Roscoe gets buzzed. I mean, absolutely shaken by Charles Huerta. Stops him in two. And then Thomas Williams and Cornelius White trade knockdowns. And Williams ends up getting the first round knockout because White simply has no beard. Gabe, this is what I mean. I think long fights sometimes can be completely tedious, monotonous, and boring. I don't mind an early knockdown. I really don't, because I think these fights, even though they were one-sided for the most part, seeing knockouts, it goes to our primal reaction of savages that just love knockouts, doesn't it?
I'm like, you know, like our dearly departed friend, Emmanuel Stewart. I love the knockout. I just love
yes.
it. I just think it's what we come to see. You know, nobody ever, you know, if you go back to the playground and somebody would scream, fight, nobody ever ran over there and goes, God, I hope this goes really a long time and nobody gets knocked down. And I just want to see some skill and, ooh, look at the way he slipped that punch. No, I want to see somebody just take one flush to the head and get knocked out. It is why we watch, I think. You know what, maybe some reversal, two guys get, you know, like we saw in one of the fights where a guy gets knocked down, he gets back up, then he drops the other guy, you know, and then there's a knockout after. That's drama, you know. Everything else, I mean, it's kind of hard, especially like in this period where I'm watching, you know, I'm doing this play, and so I'm watching the fights, and some of them I already know how they're playing out. And man, like Garcia Burgos, I was really hard to watch. It was not that exciting of a fight. I already knew how it ended, and it was just like I got to watch the whole thing because, you know, full, you know, I got to know what happened, and maybe there's some nuances throughout the fight and everything. But man, yeah, I'm not that in favor of a long drawn out fight. I mean, give me, you know, Castillo Corrales 10 rounds, sure. But when it's two guys that are kind of not risking, brutal, just absolutely brutal.
You know, we have to say, Majewski just got bombed out of there. I mean, one thing about Curtis Stevens, I know people deride him as just being a TV fighter, and I tell people, who the hell cares if he is or not? It's good TV. I'm just sick of people talking about every limitation or loss that happened. My bottom line is this. I don't care where you have your guys ranked. I don't care what independent ranking body says, well, he's only the ninth best middleweight. You know what? I judge it by entertainment value. Can a guy bring some heat? Can he bring some excitement? Curtis Stevens fits the bill. Now, would he have problems being 7 inches shorter than Peter Quillen? Of course he would. But you know what? I think with one punch, as he said, he could melt chocolate. Now, in the other two fights, Charles Huerta and Cornelius White had their moments. Now, Orozco, to me, is never going to be what I'd call an elite fighter, but he's a very good fighter with some flaws because defensively he's there to hit. But I do think, Gabe, that this is a kid that needs to fight more often. It's been an issue. It was part of my story last week. But when you have a fighter who has not fought and all they do is spar for months and months at a time with the big gloves and the headgear, Gabe, I think you've talked to trainers and I've talked to trainers. The dangerous thing about sparring for months at a time without real fights, you forget how to really defend yourself in a real fight.
That is absolutely true. You know, Victor Ortiz and Andre Berto. Berto just going along with easy guys, and all of a sudden the first guy that really punches him in the mouth kind of throws you. You know, you got to mix in tough guys. I like the activity of Stevens. And, you know, with Majewski, you know, it is what it is. Not everybody's Floyd Mayweather. Not everybody's Guillermo Rigondeaux. I think the beauty of boxing and styles, you know, when you see styles make fights, is that everybody's different. Everybody's individual, and you got to enjoy them for what they are. There's a reason why I flew out to New York, you know, to see my first fight at the theater at Madison Square Garden for Stevens Golovkin. I like punchers. I like exciting guys, and I knew that Stevens would probably extend the fight a lot more than people expected. You know, they wanted three. They said three rounds. I said more like eight, and I got my eight. It was because he's an exciting action fighter, and that's what I come to see. You know, I don't think there's anything wrong with it.
You know what I really respect about Curtis Stevens, and I got into a back and forth with a good friend of mine, Sergio Mora, the Latin Snake, where he says, well, wait a minute, why are you guys talking about him getting a title shot when he's fighting guys like Patrick Majewski? And I just say to Sergio, worry about your career. The bottom line is Curtis Stevens is not getting paid all that much money. He's taking haircuts. He's being very reasonable, but he's staying active. His promoter, Main Events, Kathy Duva, are doing their jobs by providing opportunities, and just as importantly, Curtis Stevens is understanding the marketplace and his value and the big picture by saying, you know what, I don't want to wait around once a year for a big fight. Give me three or four small ones where I can give myself the best chance possible to be the best fighter I can be. I give Curtis Stevens credit. We're not saying he's fighting King Kong or Godzilla, but what he's doing is doing his job. And I think more fighters, every fighter, and we've made this point, Gabe, from Nonito Donaire, Leo Santa Cruz, Sergey Kovalev to Curtis Stevens, every fighter, Gabe, that's been active the last 3-4 years, and by active I mean more fighting more than two times a year, they have seen a benefit to their careers, haven't they?
Without question. And you look at Mora's career, and it's not like he's a boring guy. I mean, I'm not going to hold the Shane Mosley fight against him forever because, you know, it takes two to be boring. He puts on good fights. He goes for it. And he's got a marketable personality. And speaking as a Mexican-American about another Mexican-American, I like the image he puts forward. He reads, and he's not afraid to say that he likes to educate himself. He believes in his family, loves his mom. He's a really marketable guy. He just doesn't fight very often. So how can we get behind him if we don't see him but more than two times a year? He fought 2012. Let's see more of him. I think that makes absolutely perfect sense to criticize him for that. It's like, don't look around for why aren't you getting yours. Go get yours, man. Get in the ring and fight.
If Sergio Mora would be more active, I guarantee you he'd be on a faster track. And I just don't know, for as intelligent as he is, and I like Sergio, we're friends, he needs to understand that. Don't worry about who Curtis Stevens is fighting. Be impressed by the fact he's fighting. Because if you ask Sergio Mora, when's your next fight? Guess what? He couldn't give you an answer. Gabe, I understand we have another caller on the line.
Yes, in the 415, you're live on the next round.
Yo, Gabe, what's up? It's Marlon, man, on the 415.
How you doing, man?
I'm doing well, man. Just wanted to give you a shout-out. You probably know you get tons of emails, man. This is probably about 4 years ago, maybe even. I sent you an email. We had a little small debate. I think it was a resume thing. Floyd and Pacquiao, and you actually emailed me back. I didn't have, like, a membership or something like that, so I couldn't even, like, read it. But you actually emailed me back, man, and I always remembered that. So just shout out, big up to you, first off.
Hello. Thank you. You're welcome, man. I try to answer every email. I don't always get them, but there you are.
First question, where do you usually go when you're in the city, man, and watch the fights? Are you usually, like, at a home type guy or, like,
I can never really find.
I mean, I know boxing is not the NFL, but I can never really find like lively places, you know. Because I mean, I go back, man, boxing. Like I'm 38 right now, so I go back like Sugar Ray Leonard was my idol, stuff like that. But I can't never really find good places in the city, man, where I could be with some like-minded people. And, you know, enjoy the fight. So just wanted to know, like, if you had a suggestion or, I mean, I know you're kind of actually new to the Bay Area, so I should be telling you, but
I haven't found a spot yet, you know, to check them out, but I'm also kind of at a bit of a disadvantage right now. Well, not a disadvantage. I'm actually very grateful for the opportunity. I'm doing a play till like May 18th or somewhere thereabouts. So I'm not even going out to see the fights. I'm having to DVR them or in some cases, download them if I want to watch overseas fights, and then just watch them at home. That's always been kind of my MO. Down in L.A., I used to meet up with the fellows sometimes or actually go to the fights, which I'm kind of missing at the moment, being at them live, although some of the threats I get, maybe it's better that I don't go. I don't know.
Steve, you better stay out of Bay Area too, man. You're getting out your lane with Andre Ward, man.
You know what's funny? You know one thing I'm not afraid of is Andre Ward fans stepping to me because I really doubt he has all that many.
And you know what? This is where I kind of disagree, Steve. And this goes to, like, the marketing and stuff. And I like you guys because you always talk about the ratings on television, like how many butts these guys are putting in the seats. I think a lot with Ward, man, I was actually, like, third row, fourth row at the Ward-Dawson. Dude, it was like a Golden State Warrior game in there. It was packed.
Except for the fact Stephen Curry puts on a much better show. Let me say this about Ward. Before these injuries the last year or two, he had a decent following in Oakland. We've never derided that. The issue is since that point, he's lost all momentum. And Martin, some of the stuff he tweets and says are just mind-boggling. He really thinks we're all stupid. He does.
I agree definitely with that Chavez Jr. He needs to stay in his lane.
I mean, Marlon, you thought John Kerry flip-flopped. I mean, just read some of the stuff he said 3-4 months ago about Chavez to now.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm with you all the way. Like I said, and I've been following Ward since his amateur career because he kind of, like I said, he's a big deal out here in the Bay Area, believe it or not. I was at the weigh-in, all the pre-fight stuff. And he was getting crowds, man, but I think his bad matchmaking Like, they fight him in Southern California. They fight him in Atlantic City. Some guys.
Well, some of those issues, I think, had to do, again, I think Dan Goosen has done as good a job as possible. Put him in the Super Six. Most of his fights were in California. In Atlantic City had to happen because Carl Froch was not going to fight in Oakland for the finals of the Super Six. When they fought against Edwin Rodriguez, Andre Ward had delayed so much they couldn't. They actually, I was told by Goosen Tudor, they wanted to go to the Oracle for the Edwin Rodriguez fight or San Jose. The venues were not available. So, again, he's a victim of circumstance, and when you keep trying to sue to get out of your contract, you keep getting injured. I don't know who could really promote that, Marlon.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. But like I said, it's just hard on these promoters. They always shoot themselves in the foot. We saw it just on Saturday. Garcia, Mexican guy, West Coast guy, he's in Madison Square. They walked out on him like he was Rico. And I know you guys. I know you guys hate defense, but you know he's a cautious guy, counter puncher. You know what I mean? So I was kind of curious to see if you guys kind of did. You didn't Andre Ward double standard it. You put it out there that fight. I was nodding off, man.
No, listen, we call it the way it is. We're not here waving pom-poms. I'm sorry.
Right.
There's other websites for that. We're not doing that here. We don't make a lot of friends here, Marlon. I'll tell you that right now. Marlon, listen, we only have a few minutes. We got to run, okay?
Hey, man, I love you guys, man. Keep it up, man.
All right, thank you. Gabe, we have...
call again.
Gabe, do we have any more calls? We have room for one more.
I believe so. In the 909, you're live on the next round. 909.
Hey, guys, this is Fernando from Tucson.
Fernando, we got about 2 minutes for you. What can we do for you?
Yeah, I tried to call in earlier, but what I really wanted to talk about was it's nice to see Timothy Bradley being rewarded for a guy who worked hard. And, you know, boxing has a lot of bad apples, like, you know, Chavez, that get rewarded over and over and over again. But with Bradley, you've never had to see him lose it on the scales or failed drug tests or anything like that. And it's just good to see him rewarded for, you know, always pretty much doing the right thing. And I don't like how people are always criticizing him for being boring because I'm taking a lot of slack for being a
Fernando,
fan of his. For yes.
Let me just say this. I've said this before when it wasn't fashionable. You take away that stretch where Timothy Bradley faced southpaws for about a year, he's been in other good fights. That's always been something I disagreed with. He's been in good fights with Kendall Holt. I thought his fight with Junior Witter was pretty good. But starting from that Devin Alexander fight where he fought one left-hander after another, then it became kind of boring. And then me and Gabe, we kept telling everybody, do not overlook the Provodnikov fight, which, by the way, ended up being fight of the year. So I agree with you on that case, 100%.
Yeah, I agree.
He's a real fighter.
I agree. Ever since he came up, you know, since before, but I remember getting knocked down by Kendall Holt in the first round. Everybody was saying, like, he sucks and all this stuff. And I'm like, well, no, he's good. He comes back. And it's just good to see someone like that getting rewarded with another fight with Pacquiao, which I think he has an excellent shot of winning.
Yes, I think it's going to be an intriguing fight. Fernando, we got to get going, okay?
All right, thanks, guys.
Thank you for joining us. And listen, for all you guys listening in to Leave It in the Ring Radio Thursday, 11 a.m. Pacific time, which will be 2 o'clock Eastern, you got Dave, oh, this is going to be interesting. You guys are going to have Brandon Rios and Paulie Malignaggi. Now, Paulie, Gabe, is one of the best interviews in all the sports, specifically boxing. Oh, it's going to get heated with Brandon Rios. Are you sure he knows you're on this show, Gabe?
He agreed to do the show. Dave said that we got him. I guess he agreed on Twitter. We're going to talk about Gamboa Rios. Should be an interesting show if he comes on. I'm looking forward to talking to Paulie, though. He's an honest guy. He likes the back and forth. I think he can take it as well as he can give it, and I'm sure he's going to give it. It's going to be fun. I'm not looking for adversity with him. I'm just looking for honesty, and I think it's going to be a fun show, man. I'm really excited.
Gabe, a couple of notes here. Again, Daquan Arnett takes on Eddie Gomez as the opener at the Barclays Center Thursday night. Gabe, I think that's an excellent little card. And here's another one, March 15th, underneath Garcia Herrera. Deontay Wilder's going to fight Malik Scott. Gabe, I think that's a real fight for Deontay Wilder.
Oh, yeah. I think it's a really good fight for him. Because, you know, Malik's not the biggest power puncher on the planet, but he's a heck of a technician. He knows how to extend a fight. That's going to be a fun fight. I'm excited by that fight. That's a really big step up in terms of experience and class. I think they've sparred together, if I'm not incorrect. They're going to be very familiar with each other. That should be interesting.
All right, well, that's it for this week's edition of TNR. I'd like to thank everyone that made this possible and joining us on behalf of Gabriel Montoya and the rest of Max Boxing and the Leave It in the Ring Radio Network. To the next round, goodbye, everybody.